हरिः ॐ
सहनावगच्छु सहनौ भुनक्षु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 26. Another way to understand the words Ramakrishna Charana, Sparasha, Pramoda, is that Krishna's feet give happiness to the entire world and always enjoy many kinds of sports. Govardhan delights those two lotus feet wherever they touch the stones on his surface, which then at once becomes soft like newly churned butter and very cool, or else slightly warm as may suit the time. And so wherever Krishna steps, then Govardhan, he adjusts, you know, his situation, so it makes it very nice and soft and to stand on. But if it's summer, then you make it cool. If it's winter, you make it warm to step on.
What type of sport Krishna is playing?
Sports means whatever he does. Sports just means interacting with the devotees, having fun. You know, when you say he's sport, like someone's sporting in the water, just means they're having fun. That's what it means. It doesn't mean he's, you know, playing water polo or something.
Yes.
No. Krishna and the gopis play water polo, you know, they make teams. And, Or, taking yet another meaning of Rama and Charana, Krishna's playful behavior, Charana, is enchanting Rama, for the entire world. Govardhan takes pleasure, Pramoda, in helping Krishna reveal his enchanting pastimes, which bring everyone in the world in contact, Sparasha, with his lotus feet. Right? So he's giving so many other ways, which words to use in which position. Like that. You know, instead of sparsha meaning his feet are touching Govardhan, it means that then the pastimes in which everyone in the world come in contact, like we're coming in contact now.
Yes.
Like that. So that would be the meaning of sparsha. Does that make sense? So he's just taking it and he's showing it in all the different grammatical arrangements. That's the nice thing about it when the acharya is right, the shastra is right, is that even you take him in different ways, it still comes up with various meanings. But they're all still Krishna conscious. Quote, because we gopis cannot do what Govardhan does, end quote, the speaker of this verse seems to say, we are condemned. Thus, even though the gopis are full in all virtues, they consider themselves inadequate. Such is the natural dissatisfaction of persons on the highest levels of pure love of God. Because they're always thinking we could always do something more, something like this. Mm-hmm. So that dissatisfaction doesn't give a problem here. Like here, dissatisfaction is a big problem. Mm-hmm. Right? Because people aren't enthused, they don't do anything. Because it's based on our identity. We think we're the body, we're not able to do something, we're not competent enough. So then we feel something lacking. So in that way, then, it's not nice. Right? It doesn't come out good. So one's not inspired, one can't get involved. But here is their feel lacking, so therefore they work hard to try to make do what they can. But the point is they're perfect, but they're always thinking that it could be more perfect. So even though they're finding a lack, there is no lack. Yeah. Yeah. 110. In the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, Lord Krishna is continually vibrating his flute as he herds all the animals of Braja, even under the full heat of the summer sun. Seeing this, the cloud in the sky has expanded himself out of love. He is rising high and constructing from his own body, with his multitude of flower-like droplets of water, an umbrella for the sake of his friend. But so here is that the clouds come, because if it's hot, then they come just the shade. So just as Krishna's moving, then they'll move and like that. So you still have the nice sun, but then the cloud will always be in the right place. Right? You know, so that's the niceness. So. Maharaj Parikit has glorified Brajabhumi in a general way by praising its principal attractions, the Vrindavan forest and Govardhan Hill. Now in 41 verses, beginning with this one, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-16, he will continue to glorify Brajabhumi by praising various forms of life in Braja, one after another, in order to increase, in order of increasing importance. He selects those living beings that receive Krishna's special mercy, each in its own way. We can understand that King Parikit, while reciting each of these verses, felt something of the individual ecstatic moods of the devotees he was describing. The clouds in the sky above Brajabhumi may not have taken birth inside Braja, and by ordinary judgment may not even be considered living beings. But simply by floating over Braja and obtaining Krishna's mercy, these clouds have come to life. Therefore, the gopis glorify them. The gopis single out a particular cloud that went out of his way to serve Krishna. So here's that. Here we're not even getting into, you know, it's just like this. This I don't know. You know, here, at the end of class, then they came up with a question from the MI. You know, their Bhakti by Bob in fifth canto, and it's sort of talking about the time.
Yeah.
You know, when you have the atom, and then two atoms form thing, and then three of those, and you get a
truti,
huh? Exactly. Yeah, and then that's the and you can tell that you can that's the smallest that can be seen, like the particle of light that comes through the window, mm-hmm. right? But then the question came up because in the class there happens to be a devotee. I think he's a devotee. I get the idea that he's a physicist or you know something like some variety of scientists. And so he says that can't be, that's wrong, like that. So the discussion didn't work out very good. So then they get distracted by that. So because they'll get distracted and totally miss the point that the Bhagavatam's making. Then Sanatana Goswami just says, you know, whether it's taking, you know, appeared in Vrindavan or somewhere else and floated in and all that. But the point is, as Prabhupada said, is that in Mayapur Vrindavan, this is the spiritual sky. I mean, so what you're seeing here, the planets, moon, and that, these are spiritual ones. These aren't the same ones as when you're outside. But because it's following Krishna rule, they're in the same places, because this is where they're established. The ones outside are in the same places as these. Not that these are in the same places as there. So that's why when you, let's say, drive to Calcutta, then, you know, the sun's still in the same place, but you've gone from seeing the material sun to the spirit, you know, from the spiritual sun to the material and vice versa. Right? So that we don't have to get into all kinds of long, drawn-out, useless arguments on that. Sanatana Goswami just makes this point. You know, like that. May not have taken birth inside Braja. You know, it's like that. But the point is, when they come over Braja, then they're alive. You know, people accept that easier than, oh, no, it's the spiritual. Oh, no, but how about this and that? We see from here and there. You know, you just don't want to get into it. It's an absolute waste of time. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the Krishna Samhita just on what kind of things you can say to sideline these useless arguments. So it sounds like you've said something that someone with a modern viewpoint will accept, but at the same time you've maintained the philosophy. Like that. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that, then Sanatana Goswami is doing this. So. The gopis single out a particular cloud that went out of his way to serve Krishna. That cloud once saw Krishna, Balaram, and their friends herding their countless cows, buffaloes, and other animals, and letting the animals wander, even into the hot summer sun. Krishna playing constantly on his flute. The cloud guessed that Krishna's friends might be getting tired, so he placed himself just above the spot where the boys gathered at midday, on the relatively cool ground in the shade of a circle of trees. Listening to Krishna play his flute and call out to the cows, The cloud, filled with ecstasy, rumbled with gentle thunder, as if his voice were ecstatically choking in his throat, and sprinkled fine drops of rain as if to shed ecstatic tears of joy. These offerings of love inspired Krishna to encourage the cows even more, in his sweet, deep voice, to take advantage of the opportunity to eat plenty of grass. Right. It's all nice, just how everything's perfect. That's the thing, is that Krishna's arranged, everything works nicely. So how could you have this pastime if there weren't clouds? Clouds didn't rumble, clouds didn't rain. You know, there wasn't the sun. It's not, if the cloud didn't block sun, you know, it's saying, so all these things. So all this is created for Krishna's enjoyment. That's the thing, is that all the, we could say, the laws of nature, all the metaphysical aspects are just to please Krishna. So that's all your Kriya Shakti and Jnana Shakti. It's just to create that nice atmosphere for Krishna. That's what it's for. Right? So then here, you know, unfortunately, since Krishna is left out of it, then we only look at the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis for our Icha, for our pleasure. So what we get out of it. We don't know what's the source. Because the point is naturally everything's about me, but I didn't create this, so what's the source of this? You know, that's the bewilderment. Right? Scientist is not asking about stuff he's done. Right? It's about stuff that he didn't do. But because of the atheistic mentality, they can't see that it's come from Krishna. So Krishna's arranged all this so that for his pastimes, so you have the very complex. You have to remember also, Krishna is doing things eternally. So you can't have too simple of a system. Right? And we have been here basically, practically, eternally. And we're still fine with it. You know what I'm saying? The sun comes up in the east. No one has a problem. You know, no one's saying, well, that's so old-fashioned. Why doesn't it come up, you know, over in the, you know, the south or the northwest? Why doesn't it just come up through the middle of the earth and then pop up and then bop right down again? Or, you know, so many different things. Does that make sense? So there's not a problem because it's so sophisticated that it creates unlimited variety. Right? But it all works in a cycle. Right? Because all the rasas, everything one blends into another, comes back and then changes and transforms. So all the environments do that, all the moods do that, everything does that. So that's the thing, is Krishna arranges it so perfectly that it will work like this. Okay? So, yeah. The cloud's increasing ecstasy as he watched Krishna from closer and closer made the cloud grow bigger and bigger. He could presume himself Krishna's friend because both he and Krishna were fully absorbed in working for the general welfare of the world. So as a person naturally serves a dear friend, the cloud took care to serve Krishna. Right? So when you have common aspects that you're working on, that makes you friends, right? That's how a relationship is there. There's something common, so that's what is the basis of the friendship. So because Krishna is working for the benefit of the world, or the cloud is working for the benefit of the world, then he considered we're friends. And so therefore then, you know, you take care of your friends. So the cloud is taking care of Krishna. So as a like a huge umbrella, he shaded Krishna, and he poured down a cooling rain. The cloud's raindrops are called its flowers, Megapushpa. So the drops that fell on the boys were like small flowers, or else the cloud literally showered them with heavenly flowers. You know, can also do that. So. This cloud gave special pleasure to Krishna by trying to serve not only Krishna, but also his brother Balaram and all the coward boys and cows and the other animals. Right. So if it was just Krishna, it's nice, but it's not as pleasing as if then he's serving everyone dear to Krishna. Right? So Balaram, all the cowherd boys, the cows, and all the other animals. Right? By describing this situation, the gopi speaking means to say, my dear girls, that cloud is most fortunate, but we are unfortunate. In every respect, our fate is just the opposite of this. When Krishna goes out to herd his cows, we hardly ever have a chance to see him. And even if we do, we become bewildered by hearing his flute. Distressed by love, we become debilitated, unable to act. How then can we do any practical service for Krishna, like shading him from the noontime sun? But so is that the cloud, when Krishna goes out, the cloud can be there. It's not a problem. The gopis can't. And then they're saying, even if we are there, when Krishna's playing his flute or seeing him, then they're so overwhelmed in ecstasy, they can't do anything. Right? So then they're considering themselves, you know, completely useless in this way. You know? So this is all just ecstatic symptoms, because they're going on and they'll glorify all these different devotees. 111. When the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him, and thus the floor of their current breaks, and their agitated waters move around in whirlpools. Then, with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet, and holding on to them, present offerings of lotus flowers. The rivers in Braja receive even greater mercy than the clouds. To external eyes, the rivers of Braja may seem unconscious, but they are not ordinary bodies of water. Thus another gopi sings this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-15. So is this Gopi Gita? No, this is not Gopi Gita. Okay, sings this verse in praise of those rivers headed by Sri Jamuna and Manasi Ganga. Or else, because we see Manasa Ganga as just a pond. But in the Leela, it's actually another river. So there's two rivers. So then the whole of Braj is like on an island. Like that. Or else only one river is being praised, namely the Jamuna, and she is being referred to in the plural out of great respect. In any case, right? Because both these are correct. You could either be talking about both rivers, or you could be talking about just the Jamuna but being respectful. Right? So they're showing. So that's the whole point, is that these seeming contradictions aren't a problem in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because you can look at them all these ways. They're all correct. Right? Well, the mind would think, you know, is this correct or that? Because we're used to, you do this, you get the result. You don't do it, you don't get the results. Therefore, we have to know there has to be a right and it has to be a wrong. But actually, if it's connected to Krishna, then all these things are correct. And if it's not connected to Krishna, then nothing is correct. In any case, since the other rivers of Braja are Sri Jamuna's companions, when she is glorified, so are they all. So it doesn't matter. If you glorify the main one, like if you just glorify Mother Jashoda, you don't have to separately glorify all the mothers of Vrindavan. Yes. Right? It's all taken care of, like there. So when you deal with the leading one in the group, then the others are included. But otherwise, if you're going to deal with the individuals, then generally you would then deal with all of them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Krishna is called Mukunda because he is the bestower of supreme happiness. The vibration of his flute is the sweetest of all songs. When he plays his flute near the rivers, the sound enters the river's ears and captures their hearts, making them feel the intense attraction of Cupid, which brings agitated whirlpools to their surface and stops their flowing currents. Or, understanding the word Lakshita differently, the rivers undergo many thousands of ecstatic transformations caused by desire. If the words Mukunda Gitam Avarta are split instead as Mukunda Gita Mavartam, the luxuriant potency, ma, of the song from Sri Mukunda's flute brings about reoccurring waves of arta of ecstatic symptoms, which disclose that the rivers are feeling agitated by Cupid. The gopi speaking in the depth of her love for Krishna is too confused and fearful to mention his flute explicitly, but obviously enough the words tat and gitam, which refer back to previous verses, imply the flute. Because right? There's always the moods in that also. Because sometimes we take it, no, why isn't this word exactly said? Because there's also the flavors and moods of what's being spoken and all that. Yes. Right? So in this case, then it's being spoken in a poetic way, but it's alluding to the flute, because the flute's already been spoken to about before. So naturally, if you're talking in this way, as you were saying before, you were saying these songs, yes, then it also means here, the flute.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Because everything is consistent.
Yes, consistent. And it's just building it. It's also because you have the flavors. Here, Sanatana Goswami is then saying that too confused and fearful to mention this flute explicitly. The waves of the river are like arms with which the rivers take hold of Krishna's feet in utter humility, gently covering those lotus feet in their embrace. The rivers do this just to calm the fever of lust in their hearts. If instead of covered we take stagitam to mean unmoving, the rivers embrace Krishna's lotus feet with loving enthusiasm, even though those feet are unmoved, too proud to reciprocate. Or else, taking stagitam to mean stopped, Krishna's feet are very restless, always moving here and there, yet they become tranquil by the pleasant touch of the river's embrace. The rivers express their love for Krishna by catching hold of his feet with their waves. Any river fortunate enough to have Krishna standing within her waters would certainly want to offer suitable worship to his divine lotus feet. But by the force of Cupid's attraction, bewilders the rivers and slows their currents. So despite possessing immense treasures of jewels, pearls, and other riches, the rivers can manage to present only lotus flowers. Or, reading the word Kamala as a feminine female name, by convention, a name of the goddess Lakshmi, the rivers who worship Krishna with their embraces are themselves worshipped by Lakshmi. When the rivers hear the enchanting song of Krishna's flute, they forget their normal tendency to flow towards their husband, the ocean. Instead, they turn still and assume human-like forms. And instead of their own gems and pearls, they offer Krishna his favorite braja-grown lotuses, presenting them on top of golden necklaces, upahara. The rivers would touch the 2 feet of Sri Murari with their many long arms, their waves, and hold his feet firm in their embrace. Therefore, the gopi says, we are not actually fortunate, but these rivers are. Not only are we unable to listen to the song of Krishna's flute, but our desire to be with Krishna does not stop the endless flow of service to our husbands, nor to our other household duties, right? Because the rivers, they actually stop flowing towards the ocean. But they're saying is our love for Krishna hasn't stopped anything, right? Husbands are still there, and they still expect their chapatis, right? You know, so it's not, things haven't changed. You know, right? We cannot appear before him in person, nicely dressed and suitably ornamented for his worship. Nor do we have many long, broad arms with which we can stop the restlessness of his lotus feet and place them on our breasts. Right? So they're unable to. So again, they're just glorifying the other devotees and at the same time, you know, showing that their lack, right? Like that. So, yeah. Quite opposite of the, I say, contemporary, I say, system of the dozens, right? You know the dozens? The dozens. You might know it as Yo Mama jokes. Mm-hmm. No? Never heard of it. I guess it's more of a...
Yo Mama, but not the dozens.
That's where it's from. It's called the dozens. Dozens means you try to wittily show the other person, you know, bad faults in the other person or someone connected to him, like his mom, right? Like that. And then they do until somebody outwits the other person. They have nothing to say back, right? You know, so that's the... So this is just the opposite of that, right? You know, you're glorifying the other person and then comparing yourself there that you're like that. So...
Not the same atmosphere.
Yeah, slightly different. Slightly different flavor, right? 112. The trees and creepers in the forest respond to the sound by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect in the ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Commentary. Greater than the clouds and rivers are the forest plants, who are sentient beings. Another of the gopis recites this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.35.9, in praise of the trees and creepers of Vrindavan. Oh, I see. They're all from different chapters. They're not from one chapter. In praise of the trees and creepers of Vrindavan, who have the great fortune to associate with Krishna during the day. The gopis, by singing these verses, to remind themselves of how Krishna is enjoying in the forest, achieve some solace from the pain of being separated from him. Right? Because if he's happy, then they're happy. Because they serve him just to make him happy. Right? So if he's happy being in the forest with these other devotees, that makes them happy. Right? Or at least it reduces the pain of separation. Mm-hmm. That's the main point. In the previous verse of the Bhagavatam 10.35.8, the gopi saying of Krishna's playing his flute to call the cows. Venu na ahvayanti ga sa yadahi. Thus the sound the trees and creepers are responding to is the sound of Krishna's flute. The flute song directly addresses the cows, not the trees and creepers. Yet the trees and creepers of Vrindavan and the other forests of Braja react in ecstasy, pouring down a continuous flow of sap. It seems that they behold the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, inside their hearts and outside. And though the all-pervasive Supreme Lord Vishnu appears in numerous forms, they see him in one form who submits himself to the control of pure devotion, Sri Nanda Kishore. The creepers try to hide that they are seeing him, as one might try to hide that one is seeing a rare and secret treasure. But their ecstatic love confounds their attempts, right? Because you mentioned before is that the gopis, that they shyly maybe look or glance or look away or hide their faces or cover their faces with their cloth or, you know, so many ways that they're shy. That's if they think they're being seen. But it mentions if they're not seen, then they're just staring with wide open eyes at Krishna.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But if they think someone's seeing, then they immediately cover.
Yes.
Like that. So here then the creepers, because of the feminine aspect, the trees are the masculine and the creepers are the feminine. Right? So then they will have this aspect of shyness and stuff like that. Well, the trees, it seems, are just more, you know, straightforward. Yeah. Yeah. But their ecstatic love confounds their attempts. Unwittingly, they let everyone see that Krishna is manifest in their hearts. The symptoms of Krishna's inner presence are obvious. The creepers are outwardly rich with an endless supply of fruits and flowers. And their branches bend low, not only from the weight of those fruits and flowers, but also from an inner mood of humbleness, which shows a deep wealth of good qualities derived from piety and spiritual knowledge. Moreover, right, so the good qualities are there. You're performing the devotional activity. Now, performing the devotional activity, that gives a result. Same time as why are you performing the devotional activity, that's with the proper knowledge and understanding. So that will give that kind of, it will deepen one's knowledge. Right? The activity itself will then give those qualities. So that's why a devotee then will have all good qualities, right? And have that devotional sentiment. Because they've been engaging the qualities in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can refer to the piety and the other. So we're not interested in piety on its own, but the piety that's there with devotees is always praised because it's come because of their service to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Moreover, the gross and subtle bodies of the creepers show signs of transcendental ecstasy. evidence that the creepers possess the deepest inner wealth of pure devotion. Right, so subtle and gross body. So that means the sattvika bhavas in the body and anu bhavas, but then the sanchari bhavas in the mind. Because all these are combination and they all view subtle and gross. Okay. The creepers and also their husbands, the trees, are fully endowed with these symptoms of external and internal wealth. The gopis mention the creepers before the trees because the creepers are women like themselves. These creepers and trees are very much resemble Sri Krishna's devotees, right? Because if you're going to talk about a couple, talk about the lady first. In this way. It means if you're a lady. If you're the man, you might talk about the man first and then talk about it, you know. Yes. See? There's a system, right?
From time immemorial.
Huh?
From eternity.
Yes, eternally. So you have to know how to... These creepers and trees very much resemble Sri Krishna's devotees, who are rich with the fruits of beauty, aristocracy, wealth, and influence, and with the flowers of children and other family members. Krishna's devotees are rich with the flower-like Vedas, which offer lush promises of rewards, are richly steeped, right, because they're going to do so many things for Krishna, right, and are richly steeped in study of the Vedas, and performance of Vedic sacrifices, and are also rich with the fruits of enjoyment in this life and the next. Nonetheless, these devotees remain always bowed down in humility, shyness, and other saintly qualities, and their family members, Vitapa, show these qualities as well. Because, right? So they're teaching the family these things also, so it naturally goes. So, by association and all, right? Mm-hmm. The devotees of the Lord try to keep Sri Vishnu hidden in their hearts, like a housewife who tries to conceal her extramarital affair. But the Lord so thoroughly pervades the inner and outer workings of all the senses that the devotees cannot keep him from openly shining forth. Right? So that's always the flavor that's used, is that whatever's the internal, one's trying to hide that. One's not trying to make it manifest. Right? But it will manifest anyway, but at least one's making the effort. Right? Especially when they hear the song of Krishna's flute, their intensified love expresses itself in their bodies as horripilation on their limbs, and they shed torrents of ecstatic tears and show other signs of joy. As indicated in this verse by the words Vyanjayanti Va, as if exhibiting, Vaishnavas naturally want to respect the sanctity of their prema by not showing it to everyone, anyone and everyone. Prema should not be allowed to degrade into a cheap public spectacle. But when symptoms of increased ecstasy appear in their bodies, Vaishnavas sometimes cannot completely conceal their inner feelings. The songs, like this one, that the gopis sing in the 35th chapter of the 10th canto, differ from their complaints of separation from Krishna, cited earlier from previous chapters. Before, the gopis mostly lamented their bad fortune, but now they are seriously trying to raise themselves above the misery of being separated from Krishna during the day. By singing these songs, they actually feel great joy, as Sukadeva Goswami states at the end of the chapter, 10:35-26. O King, during the daytime, the women of Braja thus took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and the minds and hearts of those women, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. Although the women intensely felt the pain of separation from Krishna, by singing about his pastimes, they were able to keep their minds fixed on him. And so they were happy even during the day. Because it's remembering Krishna that makes you happy. Right? So then they're feeling separation, so they fix their mind on Krishna by glorifying Krishna, thinking about Krishna. Not just thinking, oh, I feel bad. They talk about Krishna. Right? So then by talking about it, they're with him, that makes them happy. At the beginning of chapter 35, 10:35-1, Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls, although saddened, spent their days singing of his pastimes. This statement can be understood to mean that even though being apart from Krishna made the gopis sad, they managed to pass the days happily, by singing about his pastimes. So this is the system that's given to us, right?
Yes.
So it's the same system. So it's the system used by the gopis, mm-hmm. you know, to maintain themselves during the day when they're separate from Krishna.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's not a, can I say? It's not a small time thing. You know, it's not, yes.
The system is the same. However, there's a Purvarak and then the Vipralamba, the meeting Krishna.
Yes.
So what would be the difference?
Well, it means the difference is our attitude. They're on the platform of prema, so then what I'm saying is the activity is the same. But by associating with that activity and then hearing about and associate with those personalities who are performing these activities, then slowly we move forward towards that, or at least see it as something desirable.
So we develop the exact same mood.
Yes, we'll develop the exact same mood because of association. Mm-hmm. So when we associate with the associates of the Lord, we ourselves then take on that mood. That's the important element, is the association. As you were saying before, the difference between the gopis who went to the Rasa dance on the first night and not was association. Those who had the association went, those who didn't go. Like that. So we're getting this association so that we can develop ourselves can develop. Yes.
So is the gopi day our life?
The gopi day is our lifetime.
Is the gopi day
our lifetime? Sorry.
Oh yeah, it means if you want to take the point further, the analogy. Yes, you could say like that. It just means that when Krishna is away, yeah. like that, and so we're here and he's there. Like that. But if you remember him, then he's in the heart, so he's right there. But if we don't, then he's very far away. That's the Upanishad. He's very near, yet he's very far away. So if you remember him, he's right in the heart. You can't get any closer. Okay. But if you forget him, then, you know, he's in Golok Vrindavan, which is you can't even measure it, how far away. Yeah. 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 So, yeah.
It depends on how perspective.
Yes, yes. That's the whole thing. It's all about perspective. But the point is that perspective means it's connected to Krishna. See, the modern politically correct concept of it's all about perspective or perception is going to be what is the politically correct perception. And if you're following that, then that's right.
Yes.
Right? But what we're saying about the aspect of perception and perspective is if it's in connection with Krishna, according to as given by the acharyas coming down from authority, then that's right.
Yes.
So yes, it does. It's all about perspective and all about perception. Right? That's the real thing. But the point is are you seeing Krishna in it or not? Right? Does that make sense?
So that's a stable perspective, really.
Yes.
Isn't it? Whereas the other is just dependent
yes.
on. What we feel
whatever,
physically.
Which way the wind was blowing,
yeah.
which side
yeah.
the bed you got out of, you know, did the toaster work or not, you know, like that. When they reached in, was there only, you know, a quarter inch of milk left in the container, you know, all these different things help make up them. So because the one we can control, the other one we can't. So Krishna consciousness, we can be consistent and see everything connected to Krishna. So when we say perspective. Or perception, it's how we see it.
Yes.
Because how everybody else will see it, you can't actually do much about it. Even you adjust doesn't mean they like you any better.
Yes.
You know? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty.
Yes.
Is you're always going to have that thing. It doesn't matter how someone deals. If you don't like the person, it doesn't matter how they dress, it's still the same person.
Yes.
You know? You know, if it's a way you like dressing, maybe they're less annoying, but it's still. So this idea is, no, we just change and then that will make everything work. No, it's our perspective has to change. Because that's what changes others, then by association. Otherwise, if we change for them, then what association can we give? We've already associated with them and changed just by remembering them. But it's a matter of you have to remember Krishna. Then by remembering Krishna, then one's always in contact with Krishna. That changes us. then that is then interesting to the others, because that's what they don't have.
Because
yes. When it comes to material, what are we going to do to impress? Right? Because whatever we can do, there's someone who's got more. You know? Always. You know, if you thought you had the fanciest Rolls Royce, someone drives up with something more. You know, it's just whatever you have, someone's got more. You know?
Many.
Yeah, many times more. It's not even just a touch more, you know. Yeah, it's just, it's, yeah.
By associating with the acharya, we can get their perspective.
Yes, that's how we deal. So that's the thing, is that we're given the opportunity for the same kind of, you know, it's applied for us.
Yes.
You know, that's the
yes.
thing, so it's not exact. But it's applied for us. Therefore, they do this spontaneously. We do it through Vaidhi. You know, we're shown, you do this, you do that. You know, therefore the different, you know, rules of the Sankirtan movement. Right? Because these are the recommendations. They work for us. Right? But all this being recommended is what they do. Right? But since we're not doing what they do, we're doing things that are not useful. That's why then there's the rules what not to do. Right? The gopis don't have to worry about doing anything they shouldn't be doing. They're only doing what they should be doing.
Yes.
So therefore we have a few more rules. Like that. You know, it's like, yeah, no, the kid, there's a basket of apples, they reach for the apple, don't take the apple. Then they put it back. What about this apple? No, not that one. What about this one? You know, so no, don't take anything from the basket. What about that basket? You know, you know, it's like, so that's the thing. So therefore, so many rules, because we have, you know, we're very spontaneous on the platform of figuring out what not to do. You know, so you know, there must be plenty. According to the explanation given by Srila Sridhar Swami, the gopi praising the creepers and trees of Vrindavans means to say, if even the plant life has such deep love for Krishna, how can we be expected to tolerate being separated from him? All the same, by singing the glories of Krishna, whose transcendental body is the essence of all bliss, the gopis felt great pleasure. Their songs are not pitiful lamentations, but the highest revelations of ecstatic love. Or, if one prefers to see the negative side of love and separation, the word mahodaya, festivity, can be understood to be used ironically to indicate just the opposite of what it literally means. That is to say, because the hearts of the gopis burn incessantly in the fire of prema, they never enjoy a moment's happiness. So it just depends how you want to, which aspect you want to bring out. Right? Because they're all correct. But that they never enjoy, by incessantly burning in the fire of prema, they never enjoy a moment's happiness. It means then they're always in that element of separation. But that is in itself is a festivity of the highest happiness. So, but it's perceived as unhappiness, but it's the actual highest happiness. Right? Does that make sense? You know, by the symptoms outside is that, but what they're feeling is a different thing. Yes, yes. But it's also, there's different, it's just like, let us say, like take hair standing on end, okay? There's a standard feeling that's there, right? Now, if you're afraid, that might cause it, right? But now let's say you see something very wonderful, it might cause it. Or hear about some emotional kind of thing or some kind of, something like that has a strong emotional, you might cause it. You understand? So, but it's the same thing. So from the outside, it looks one way. So therefore, when you see the gopis, the mood of separation, you would take it that in under ordinary circumstances, this would be sadness.
Yes.
But actually, what is being is the highest ecstasy. So that's why, depending upon what you're bringing out at the time, you can take it either way. That's why he says, if you want to see it in the negative, you can see it this way.
Yes.
But otherwise, in here, so far, he's been giving it in the positive. Like that. Because he started off that they're feeling that separation, that lamentation, how useless they are. But then as the prayers go, then they start becoming more and more absorbed in the ecstasy of glorifying the devotees and thinking of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So, in other words, Sanatana Goswami, all these things are there in the Bhagavatam, but he's revealing how they also can be just in one of their days, how it goes through.
Yes.
You know, so when they sit and discuss, they go through like this. Mm. So we're just given, you know, something to appreciate. Right? Mm. And then he can afford to do this, because he can sit right, and if it gets overwhelming, he can come back again tomorrow. Right? The Sukadev can't do that. He has to speak and get through it. So he breaks things up, so it's... You understand? You know, it is fits in the place, but it also, he doesn't show... Because otherwise, each one, they're getting more and more ecstatic, then he would have a... Does that make sense?
Okay.
113. Oh, original personality... These bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Commentary. Better than the non-moving creatures are those who can move, beginning with the insects, bugs, and worms. Parikrit Maharaj now recounts Lord Krishna's praise of the bees who follow his brother Balaram wherever he goes. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:15:6. As mentioned before, Krishna is speaking to Balaram, but whatever he says about Balaram applies in fact to himself. The bees therefore never stop chanting Krishna's glories, which are like holy pilgrimage sites that bestow spiritual upliftment on all living beings. Krishna's glories, like the universal magnanimous spiritual master, can deliver any person, whether fit to be saved or not. Those glories bestow upon everyone who comes in contact with them divine knowledge of the greatness of pure devotional service. The bees that follow Krishna are great sages, but not sages like the self-satisfied impersonalists. Rather, they are Krishna's devotees, bhavadhiya. And of his devotees, they are among the most elevated, mukya. Because although Krishna hides himself in the forest, they never stop following him. He is their all in all, the Lord of their life. To join him in the forest, they disguise themselves as bees, and thus take the opportunity to worship him always with their songs. Here Krishna calls Balaram Adi Purusha, the original Supreme Person. This means that the bees who are always with the Lord are among the Adi Sevakas, the Lord's original eternal servants. They always worship him suitably according to the various pastimes he performs. Sri Krishna also calls Balaram Anagha, meaning sinless, free from all faults, neglectful of all offenses against him, and granting salvation from all miseries. Okay. Free from all faults, is it? Neglectful of all offenses against him, and granting salvation from all miseries. These are all the qualities of Balaram. Because the Lord is Anagha in these ways, the bees can never abandon him. They worship him in any circumstance, fearless of reactions for their offenses, and confident that devotional service will protect them from all distress. In truth, the bees of Vrindavan are better than other sages, because the bees never stop singing the glories of Krishna, whereas other sages sometimes fall silent, absorbed in ecstatic trance. Right? We saw in Tapaloka that they would come together and discuss about the Lord, but then they would go back to their places and then their ashrams, yes, and then just be absorbed in trance. Yes, yes. So then these bees are even greater than these sages, because they're always glorifying the Lord.
Yes.
Those bees are like the great Vaishnava Munis, who never stop seeking Krishna even though he is hidden in the forest of the Vedas. Though his pastimes are difficult to understand and his service is difficult to achieve, the determined Vaishnavas never abandon him. They strive to locate his glories even on the paths of karma and jnana. So whatever they're doing, they strive to see Krishna in them. So in their activities, they try to see Krishna. In their intelligence, they try to see Krishna. You know, within the mind, their feelings, they try to see Krishna. They always sing those glories and promote them as the most serviceable spiritual asset. And so they realize Krishna directly as the indwelling supersoul of all jivas, the worshipable Supreme Lord. As Vaishnava sages surrender to Krishna, giving up everything to serve him in pure love, so do the bees in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. Right, so the glories of Krishna, that's what you're serving. Right, the very service, because he has these, all these qualities, you're serving that. Right? It's him. But I'm saying that's the medium you're going to serve through. Right? Mm-hmm. So just like if you serve his feet, you're serving him.
Yes.
It's not that we're just about the feet and we don't care about the rest of it, you know. Like that. Is that a sense? You know, so the qualities are not different from him, but it's the qualities to which you one serves him. Like you see in Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives us Vibhava, all the 64 qualities of Krishna. Right? It's not talking about other things. It's talking about his qualities, because that's what then gives rise to that ecstatic love for Krishna. Right? So, you know, his bodily symptoms, his mood, his intelligence, his identity, how he deals, everything. That's going to be the medium. So then the devotees appreciating those qualities, that's how they talk about their relationship with him. Right? Because those qualities will be manifest in different ways. Krishna's wonderful flute. So this is 114.
Limitless.
And forever.
Glories
of Bhakti. Yeah, okay.
No limit.
Ananta takes up the discussion here.
Yeah.
Mouth one says. Okay. Okay. 114. The charming flute song steals away the minds of the cranes, swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, and maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. This is another verse sung by the gopis who were trying to console one another during the daytime when Krishna was absent. The birds of Braja are superior to the bugs and insects, but even among the birds there are different levels of Krishna consciousness. The waterfowl are a little less fortunate than the others because they have less opportunity to be close to Krishna. Right? So only when he's down at the Jamuna, yes. Manasi Ganga, places where there's water, then they can be around. Because that's, well, otherwise why are they waterfowl unless they stay close to water, right? So then when Krishna's at the water, then they're there, and that adds to the whole flavor, because when you're next to the water, then they do different things, they do make certain sounds and all that that are exclusive to water birds, right? And then, but the other birds, they can move anywhere. So then saying that they're a little less fortunate because only when Krishna does pastimes there, while the other birds can follow him everywhere. The waterfowl described in this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:35-11, live in a faraway lake filled with clean water, clusters of lotuses, and various other attractions. Innumerable cranes, swans, and other birds forever sport in that lake. But when they hear the beautiful song of Krishna's flute, their minds are captivated. First they become bewildered and fly about madly in all directions. Then they return to the lake and settle down to engage in serious worship of Lord Hari, to fix their attention exclusively on him. They restrain their minds, bodies, and speech. They subdue their minds, close their eyes, and resort to complete silence, bringing not only mind, sight, and speech, but all their senses under strict control. Or, understanding the word upasata, to mean they approached rather than they worshipped, the birds leave the lake to come near Krishna and sit by his side. Being close to Krishna gives them the highest pleasure, as shown by the way they become peaceful, closing their eyes and staying silent. The word hanta in this verse indicates joy and surprise, but can also be taken to express disappointment. And according to the whole statement of the verse, can be understood in a different way. The birds approach Krishna and apparently calm down. but were their minds actually peaceful? Not at all. Taking the liberty to add the negative prefix a to the words milita and dritta mauna, we can read it te yata chita hanta milita drishto dritta mauna. The birds could not control their minds. Ayata chita could not close their eyes. Amilita drisha and could not be silent. Adrita mauna. Their meditation on Krishna caused such ecstatic mental transformations that they couldn't possibly keep their minds calm. They were in such anxiety from being unable to see Krishna that they couldn't close their eyes, which even lost the natural ability to blink. And they took to such loud Samkirtan of Krishna's names that any trace of sobriety was out of the question. So just those little adjustments and you get exactly opposite. So if one wonders where this concept comes, where one verse can mean so many things, this is actually it, because connected to Krishna, then it brings out all the glories, because Krishna is unlimited. So the verse is about one aspect of Krishna, but all other aspects are connected to that. Right? So you have a quality of Krishna you're seeing, but all other qualities are connected there also, because it's one person. So it can mean all these other different things also. So as long as it brings out the transcendental, the nature of what you're discussing, like here the transcendental ecstasy of the different devotees, then it works. But if you come up with some other kind of thing, breaking it away, that means, you know, Tuesday afternoon, you know, burgers are half price, then that you don't, that you would not do. Does that make sense? Yeah. Or understanding the bird's condition in another way, as a result of worshipping Krishna by meditating upon him, they attain the ecstasy of murcha, loss of consciousness, their minds dissolving into oblivion. They simply close their eyes and fell silent. In other words, the gopi's speaking implies, although these birds are members of a different species of life, though they live in the sky, though they are males, and though they live in a distant lake, where they are busy enjoying in various ways, the song of Krishna's flute has forcibly dragged them into Krishna's association. Concentrating their minds on Krishna has awakened in the birds a transcendental prema that has destroyed their natural peace and thoughtfulness, disturbing their consciousness with all sorts of agitation and rendering them completely bewildered. What can be said then of the constant state of the gopis, who have no other purpose in life than to serve Krishna? They too must be suffering, but much more severely. Because if they're the, you know, the rasa is the most complete, so whatever is there in anybody else's ecstasy of serving Krishna is there in the gopis. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's there. So whatever it is, it's glorious, but for them it's just more. But when you talk about it as somebody else, then it's easier to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And the bird ears, can we say that they are in a shanta relationship?
Yes, they'll be shanta. Means the shanta ras, the sandini potency expands the shanta ras. So that will be all the birds, the animals, the trees, the fish, the, you know. It means the situation. Everything, yes. That's situation. Yes. That's all shanta. So that's all come from sandini. Right? So then the dasya, shakya, and ratsalya, that's coming from the sambit potency. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the main, so the main activities all is there. Then Hladini expands the conjugal ras. Does that make sense?
Shanta can be very intense also.
Yes, it's Braja Bhakti. It means everything in Braj, all the devotees in Braj, they're all in Braja Bhakti. Then it's within Braja Bhakti which rasa they're in.
Yes.
The Braja Bhakti is there. But if you don't have the environment, how do you...
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the lovers sit on the bench, but it's because the sun's going down, then that adds to the atmosphere, or the birds are chirping, or, yes. You know what I'm saying? You know, all these different things, they add to the environment. Yes. So that's why the Shanta Ras is creating that environment.
Yes.
Right? They create the background. So you always have to have the environment. Then there's the activities in the environment, then there's the intent of those activities. Yes. Right? So the environment is there. Right? So then you're going to perform the activity. right? The mechanics of it, but your intent is to please Krishna, right? Yeah. So the Ichha Shakti is there. Does that make sense? So in the environment of Sat, then you perform activities, Chit, to please Krishna, Ananda. Right? Then it's complete. You can't just have one without the other, or this or that. That's why if you focus just on the environment, it's the lowest of them. Mm-hmm. You focus on the skills, the activities, like that, that's the next. But then the point is what are people experiencing from that? What are they gaining from that? You know what I'm saying? You know, that's why it seemingly seems, because if you extract it and don't see the whole thing, you seemingly see is, oh, the person wants to do this, but you don't care because they're not qualified. But the other person is concerned. No, but they want, because that's the higher principle.
Yes.
But the point is, you know, you should, you how you say, Prabhupada says, first deserve, then desire.
Yes.
Right? Means, in other words, you have the qualification to do that activity, then desire to do it, not desire to do it and you don't have the qualification.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Right? Because it builds like that. The environment's right, the activity's right, then, and the intent is right. Right? Of course, the intent is right, therefore you see the situation connected to Krishna, you see the activities connected to Krishna. But it's going to build that way. I can only get the pleasure of Krishna when the activity has been performed, when the situation is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it means? So that's why they're all connected. They're non-different, but at the same time as a difference is made.
You can appreciate each of the individual qualities in the whole.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. 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 So yes, yes. So you study each one of them individually, but you're trying to see them all together as a whole. Because if you try to do it as a whole, you won't know what's what. If you study it on its own, then you understand that's this aspect, that's this aspect. You know, and so then you see the whole thing. You know, just like, I think we can do it. It's just a matter of the example, right, this morning. Yeah, here and here. Yeah, we gave an example this morning on something. Guy couldn't relate at all, so we had to get into, like, playing video games. Okay, yeah. Then he understood. Like, so, you study, okay, what does the ginger do? What does the cumin do? What do the chilies do? The ghee, right? What does the water, the salt, the tumor, all these different things, what does the different aspects add? The different techniques, you study them all separately, but then they're put together as a preparation. Then in the preparation, each one has their place. It's not that one's just there and one the other. That's the problem. What happens when we take one of them, we just say it's that. You know, it's just like someone trying to cook, and all they do is just, you know, toss a bunch of cumin in there. Nothing else. No other technique, no salt, no anything, no, you know, like that. Or, does that make sense? So, that's the problem, you know, we're seeing this morning. It's okay. The wife is obedient to the husband, so they only see that part, but they don't understand why is the wife obedient? Because of his behavior. Like that. So they don't see the things. And then what does that do? That creates then more attachment on his side. So he acts more in that way that creates more obedience, and so it just keeps going like that. So then you get the whole flavor. And then in that, then there's other things. There's the environment, there's the family, there's all. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. 115. Oh, mother, in this forest, all the birds have risen into the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. With closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibration of his flute. And they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely these birds are on the same level as great sages. Another gopi, enchanted by hearing Krishna's flute, sings this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-14, to Mother Jashoda, or else to a girlfriend. Here, even more fortunate, birds are glorified. So that means that the word mother can be used as generic. That means someone who's a friend, you can even call them that. Mm-hmm. Like that. Despite modern interpretation. Okay. Even more fortunate birds are here. even more fortunate birds are glorified, because we talked, the water birds were the last. Now we're here talking about more fortunate birds than those birds. Those who live in the same trees that provide shade for Krishna as he wanders about the Vrindavan forest. All the birds in Vrindavan should be recognized as great sages, or as indicated by the word praya, taken to mean many. Sages are not so numerous in Braja, but there are many birds. These birds are able to hear the mellow song of Krishna's flute, which Krishna plays for the enjoyment of the cows and the cowherd boys and girls of Sri Vrindavan. When Krishna is far away, the birds may not hear the sound distinctly, but still its effect on them is vivid. The sound bestows upon them the vision of Krishna, Krishnasya Ikshitam, and by bringing them to the tops of the trees, it also becomes the means by which Krishna sees them, Krishnena Ikshitam, right? Because when the birds inside the tree, you don't really see them. When they sit on the top, on the branches, that's when you can really see the birds. Yeah. So then when you hear the flute, they go up to see Krishna, but that means he can see them. Right? Because if they can see Krishna, it means Krishna can see them.
Yes.
Right? Okay. It becomes the means by which, by bringing them to the tops of the trees, it also becomes the means by which Krishna sees them, Krishnena Ikshitam. The flute song is also Krishna Ikshitam, seen by Krishna, in the sense that only Krishna can conceive of such beautiful music. It is produced from Krishna, Krishnasya Uditam, and this suggests also that the sound of the flute creates an opportunity for the birds to perceive Krishna by hearing. Hearing the sound is another way for them to see Krishna, who is not easily visible to them through the abundant foliage. Right, because Krishna's down, so they're up in the trees, like especially on the top, so they can see some places, but other places if he moves. Right? Mm-hmm. But they can hear, they can see through sound.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what we do. We see through sound. We're not here in these places. Yeah. But by hearing, yeah. then we're does that make sense? Yeah. So we see through sound. That's the meaning, Shastra Chakshus. We see through Shastra. Mm. Through the rich new growth on the branches makes it difficult for the birds to see Krishna. It also attracts Krishna to the trees to pick the fresh leaves, fruits, and flowers. So the birds put aside their normal business of foraging and fly to the highest branches where the leaves and twigs don't block the light, line of sight between them and Krishna. Perched in the treetops, eyes closed in meditation, the birds appear like great sages. Indeed, sages who want to devote themselves to Krishna perch themselves on various branches of the tree of the Vedas, which bear the attractive, tender twigs of various methods for spiritual advancement. The sages learn from the Vedas how to realize Krishna, and with enthusiasm they practice the disciplines approved by the Vedas, such as offering to Krishna the results of all work. But even while seriously studying the Vedas and pondering what they mean, the sages become attracted to hear Krishna's all-attractive flute and become eager to see him. They cease to be attached to their Vedic education and instead become attached to seeing Krishna constantly in their hearts. Right? Because they're practicing these things to see Krishna. So at some point, the focus on the methods used to see Krishna and seeing Krishna, then one moves to that. Does that make sense? Was using the method to see Krishna, but when you see Krishna, then you focus on seeing Krishna. Right? So that's why sadhana is there, because then the practice will just go on anyway.
Yes.
But the focus is not on the practice, the focus is on the application of seeing Krishna. So. Closing their eyes in great ecstasy, they then dedicate themselves exclusively to his Nama Sankirtan. Or else it may be understood that sages devoted to the personality of Godhead come to the Vrindavan forest to become birds and listen to the song of his flute. According to the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami, all sages, even if confident even if content in their own selves, should become birds in the Vrindavan forest. All sages, even if content in themselves, should become birds in the Vrindavan forest. So that's his commentary. These sages sit and meditate on the Lord. They just become birds, and they can just sit, they can there with Krishna, hear the flute, and meditate. Mm-hmm. Right? Better that than out somewhere and like that. Or, granting that some sages are disqualified from entrance into Vrindavan because they're less fortunate and confused by Maya, at least most of them should, praya, right? Meaning the great numbers of them. They should become birds in Vrindavan because thus they can easily achieve what they aspire for and much more. And so whatever they want, they can get more. Because the birds living in the Vrindavan forest have the great fortune to be able to hear Krishna's flute so often, they should be acknowledged to be greater devotees than the bees. And thinking about the birds makes Krishna's girlfriends even more disappointed than before. Right? So the more they go up and the more advanced, the more glorious, the more ecstasy, the more they're disappointed. You know, so they're going in the opposite, the two are going in the opposite directions. Right? So that's the point, is that the Achintaveda Tattva, that can deal with all these contradictions and bring out the niceness like that. That's the glory of Krishna consciousness. How terrible is this? We don't have such unalloyed devotion to Krishna. We can't see Krishna or hear his flute when he goes to the forest. We can't renounce everything and climb the branches of the trees. And when we don't see him, we can't simply stop thinking and close our eyes like these birds. To hell with us as gopis. Right here. I guess this is where you see for the birds is in a higher statement, right? In a better position, right? One 16. Blessed are all these foolish deer, because they have approached Maharaj Nanda's gorgeously dressed son after hearing him play on the flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of love and affection. In this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-11, another gopi glorifies the deer. The deer, being similar in species to the cows and other creatures tended by the personality of Godhead, are able to accompany them while grazing. Danyasma means they, the deer, are fortunate. Or, considering the grammatical license granted to saintly authors like Vyasadeva, another way to understand danyasma is we are fortunate. This is possible if we allow Srila Vyasa the liberty of leaving off the final letter of the word sma, we are, the way it is sometimes left off in the text of the Vedas. In other words, we consider it our great fortune that these deer have responded to the flute song of our beloved Sri Nanda Nandana by approaching to worship him with all respect. Right? So you can see here is that to deal on this level of grammar, they also have to know the Vedic grammar. Because otherwise, how would you know that the Veda itself, you know, sometimes just uses sma without smaha. You know, it's like that, so it gets slightly different meaning. Right? Does that make sense? The worship done by the deer was very simple. Being performed, right, but they're such scholars, but this is how they use their scholarship. To bring out such rasa, to bring out such, you know, understanding of Krishna from so many different angles. So it's not about tasting the grammatical aspect, it's about tasting the rasa that it's the medium for. Right? So it looks similar, but the effect is totally different. One is full of rasa, and one is very dry. Right? The worship done by the deer was very simple, being performed with nothing more than loving glances. The deer had no paraphernalia at their disposal for worship, and other than those loving glances, nothing would have satisfied Krishna. As expressed by the prefix V in the word virachitam, well arranged, the deer's method of worship was exceptionally pleasing to Krishna. The deer saw Krishna decorated with wonderful forest ornaments, like flower garlands and with peacock feathers, and gunja berries in his hair. Thus, even though the deer had taken birth as unintelligent animals, mudhamati, they were supremely fortunate. Or, understanding the meaning of mudhamataya differently, just by hearing Krishna's flute, the deer lost their power to think clearly, and their internal and external senses all became stunned. This is the natural influence of braja. Even living entities possessed of various skills are deprived of them by the reverberation of Krishna's flute and rendered dumb and immobile like inert beings. The doe normally stay hidden deep within the forest, but the sound of Krishna's flute drew them out into the open, where they came near Krishna and, beholding his beauty, were bewildered by Cupid. In that condition, they could think of nothing but him. They simply gazed at him in great love, as if worshipping him. And their husbands also reacted the same way to the song of Krishna's flute. The doe and bucks, those most exalted of animals, were endowed with such deep love for the Supreme Lord that they could never become proud of their good fortune. They always behaved like innocent creatures. So even though they're... So that's the attractiveness in there, is that they bring out that aspect, right? The innocence in the deer, the meditation in that, or the stillness, like the sages, like with the birds,
yes.
You know what I'm saying? So the humility of the trees,
yes.
The shyness of the creepers, right? So you see, is that they all have something that they bring out. So they're all qualities of Krishna. So that's the medium of which they exchange, and then the other devotees, then they're all appreciating.
Yes.
Right? You know, so it's a very, very nice, mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that.
Yes, like indeed, Krishna says, one need only offer me flour, food, water, but they're just offering a glance.
Yes, they're just offering a glance, yeah, very simple. Yeah. And it said if he didn't do that, he wouldn't be satisfied.
Yeah.
You know, so that's that glance and the loving... Loving glance and innocence, then that's what makes it so nice. You know what I'm saying? Like a dog is tough, you don't mind. But if a deer looked tough, it was kind of like, what? Something's wrong here. You know? Like sometimes you see, they make cartoons. There's maybe a dog, driving a car or a motorcycle, and looking tough. You wouldn't have a deer doing that. Right. Deer on Harley? No. As the gopis meditate on the devotional service of the deer, they cannot help but think, quote, these deers are fortunate because they can worship Krishna along with their husbands, but our foolish husbands cannot tolerate our worship of Krishna. Therefore, despite being born as human beings, fully capable, understand and act, we are unfortunate. In fact, we are most unfortunate, even though born in the very virtuous and clever cowherd caste, because we cannot follow Krishna and listen to his flute while he wanders about in his forest dress. We cannot gaze at him with wide open eyes, filled with love and serve him with pleasing glances, right? Because the deer don't have to show any shyness or anything. Right? So point is They're just deers, and they're so fortunate. While here the gopis as humans, and born as cowherds, so they're very clever and all that, right? So then, but they can't do these things, so their fortune is even less, right? These simple animals have greater fortune than them, who seemingly have everything going for them, like that.
They have less freedom.
Yes, less freedom. Like that. But it's just they're saying, like this, because then they go out and, with Krishna. This is just what they say, at this time.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And even if a few of us can occasionally perform such service for him, our husbands object. Right? So then, you know, it's not going to work out. So they're able to go with their husbands.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So that's what they see as the nice thing. Is that, so there's no problem. But here, as they try to do anything with Krishna, the husbands get upset. So they have to be more careful, right? Because otherwise, if they didn't, how would you have the parakeet flavor, right? Yes. So that's a whole nother discussion. Yes. But it's here so that they can work within that swakia. It works very nice. So the openness of the swakia, that's appreciated by those in the parakeet.
Yes.
You know, just the naturalness, the openness, the like that. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But at the same time, is because of that restriction, it creates the greatest happiness. Mm. You know, with Krishna, mm. Because there must be much more.
Yes.
There's much more surrender to do that.
Yes.
Right. You have to give up everything. Well, here the deer don't have to. Mm. Right. You know, it's not like they have a house or anything like that. So it's just the deers and the husbands, they move around as Krishna moves around, because they can move with the cows, right? They're the same kind of animals. They eat grass and all that. And so then there's no problem. It's not like a whole you know, pride of lions came along, you know, they just hang out with Krishna and the cows. That wouldn't work out so good. The word Krishna Sara means the black deer, but the word Sara also means important. So the gopis think the husbands of the deer are called Krishna Saras, because only Krishna is important to them. The attitude of our husbands, however, is just the opposite. Actually, the cowherd men are also most fortunate Vaishnavas, exclusively devoted to Krishna. Still, the gopis, as subordinate as wives, feel shy to disclose to their husbands their worship of Krishna. Right? Because all their husbands are all the cowherd boyfriend friends of Krishna, and so they all go out there. So, but they're shy, you know, by nature, to reveal these things to the husbands. But the husbands are fully absorbed in Krishna also. Right? But it's the nature of the family, because it, you know, that doesn't work that way. Right? And it's just the nature. So therefore, you can have these things. Mm-hmm. Right, the swakiya rasa, the parakiya rasa, all the things that go along with it. Because if you didn't have these restrictions, what's the matter? What's the special thing? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, so it just creates that greater and greater intensity. Mm-hmm. Constrained by the husband and wife relationship, the gopis have to worship Krishna secretly as a paramour. This unique style of worship enables the gopis to achieve the extreme limit of success, the highest degree of pure love for Krishna. Right? So at each time you're bringing out the glories of you know, one devotee or another devotee, but ultimately it comes down to the gopis are in the greatest position. But in their ecstasy, then they're pointing out that everybody else is in a superior position,
yes,
to them.
Yes, yes. Right?
So that's just the Vaishnav mood, right,
yes,
as we see it.
Yes.
117. Using their upraised ears as vessels, the cows are drinking the nectar of the flute song flowing out of Krishna's mouth. The cows, the mouths full of milk from their mother's moist nipples, stand still as they take Govinda within themselves through their tear-filled eyes and embrace him within their hearts. By far superior to the deer of Vrindavan forest are the cows personally tended by Sri Gopal Dev. In this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.21.13, other gopis glorify Krishna's cows. To the cows, the sound of Krishna's flute was just like Piyusha, the nectar created on the moon. This means that Krishna's face seemed to them like the moon. Anxious not to spill a drop of that nectar, they use their ears like cup palms to drink it carefully. Right. So, because therefore you see, is these traditional cows, they don't have just the regular pointy ears, right? It means they're like cups,
yes,
you,
yes,
know, and they can point it in the different directions and all that, so they can use them to hold the nectar of Krishna's flute, right? You know, like that. So we don't see this mentioned for the, you know, you know, like the deer, you don't see that mentioned. They have their regular kind of ears, but the cows have those like cup kind of ears. In other words, they listen to the flute with rapt attention. Despite the cowherd's vigilance, the sabas, or calves, some of the newly born, had somehow joined their mothers and were busy drinking the mother's milk. But as soon as the calves heard Krishna's flute, they forgot what they were doing. They simply kept the mother's milk in their mouths without swallowing it. And so they just get totally absorbed and forget. Right? Or else it may be that the calves were not present and the word sava refers to the cows themselves. The cows are so absorbed in drinking the nectar from Krishna's moon-like face that they became motionless like corpses, sava. As love for Krishna swelled in the hearts of the cows, milk spontaneously flowed from their udders, and the grass they were eating remained in their mouths because they were unable to chew. Like that. The cows are raised to the highest platform of love of God by seeing Krishna with their eyes and embracing him within their hearts. They were so moved that drops, kala, of tears, ashru, appeared in their eyes. Or, taking kala to mean producing, the cows were shedding profuse tears. Hearing this description, the gopis commented, "Dear friends, if the cows act like this, then we gopis, as human beings, should be excused from being driven to extremes by the force of prema." And so if the cows, they stop eating and just absorbed in Krishna and completely like this, then if they're doing it and they're just cows, then the gopis should be excused because they're so much more absorbed. Right? So, yes. Yeah. When Krishna vibrates his flute, Braja's bulls, deer, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appeared as if asleep or like figures in a painting. This verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.35.5, describes a rare good fortune shared by the cows and the bulls and the other animals that were with them. Dear friends, please now hear something wonderful. When the bulls, deer, and cows hear Krishna's flute, they feel the urge to approach him. They all come from far away and stand near him, fully enchanted. They forget about the grass in their mouths, and it either stays there unchewed or else falls from the mouths to the ground. Right? Because they cows, when they get things, it's like as humans, there's a rule that whatever you are eating should be fully in your mouth when you're chewing. But with cows, that's not the rule. You can have things sticking way out of your mouth, and it's fine. You just keep munching and slowly. You know. It's kind of like, you know, how you say kids work on this principle, like when they're eating spaghetti. Right? You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's transcendental to the standard rules. Right? You know, so, yeah. Okay. So therefore, they have it in the mouths, and either they stop chewing, it's just sticking out of their mouths, or they just stop chewing and it falls out of their mouths. Like that. So depending. Either way. Their ears standing upright, the animals remain still as if asleep, or if not living beings, but painted images. Thus, these animals, bewildered by prema, lose their powers of thought and activity. Right? Because what it was saying, they were... cock their ears. Because the cows, generally, they hang straight down. But then if there's a sound, then they'll put it right out. They'll put it, so that's up. It doesn't mean that they're straight up. Yes. Like that. It just means that they're up from being straight down. Yes. They'll put them out in the direction where Krishna is, so they'll hear it like that. Or explaining what happens in another way. At first, the cows hear Krishna's flute. Oh, no. Yeah. From a distance as an indistinct murmur, without embellishments or even a discernible melody. But simply that faint sound is enough to capture their hearts and completely agitate them. After a short time, when the cows, bulls, and deer hear the songs of Krishna's flute more clearly. They feel fear that death might intervene and separate them from Krishna. So to prevent themselves from hearing any more, they lift their front legs and forcibly cover the holes of their ears. Well, that's far out. When that fails to stop the sound, they come closer to Krishna, holding the blades of grass in their mouths as a sign of humble entreaty. And when that also fails to stop Krishna from playing, they all become stunned. Because that's also a thing, is that with a, you know, a blade of grass in your mouth or straw in your mouth, then you know it's a shine of humility and all that. So then, you know, then in that way it shows that dainya that they have, that humility that they have, that the grass is just there in their mouth. Like that. Yeah, so when that doesn't work, then they become stunned. Right? So first they hear, and then when it, you know, so it's interesting, when it gets more clear, then they're worried about separation, so then they try to stop it. That doesn't work, so they come near. When that doesn't stop it, then they just get stunned. Yes. 119. The Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder. Endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet, this powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds. And when the Aborigine women smear it on their face and breasts, they feel fully satisfied and give up all their anxiety. The human beings in Braja, of course, are more exalted than the lower forms of life. In this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-17, one gopi first glorifies the outcast women who dwell in the forest. The Pulindas are an aboriginal tribe living in Braja. They are also known as Sabardas. Referring to them also implies other tribes of Braja, including the Bila tribe. The low-class Pulinda women felt fully satisfied, Purna, when they smeared themselves with the effulgently red cumcumin that came from the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Guru Gaya, who plays his flute, Gayati, in many wonderful ways, Buruta. As soon as they smeared this cosmetic powder on their faces and breasts, the Pulindis felt relief from the piercing arrows of Cupid. How was this kumkum usually found on the breasts of women, found on the grass by the Pulindis? Out of shyness, the gopis do not explain the reason in so many words, but the fact is that this kumkum came from the breasts of some of the gopis. Those particular gopis who had succumbed to the allure of Krishna Samkirtan and the song of Krishna's flute had allowed him to seduce them. During their intimate pastimes, the kumkuma had been transferred from their breast to his lotus feet. Later, as Krishna walked through the forest, that same kumkuma fell from his feet onto the grass and stones on the path. Apparently, Krishna was walking vigorously because the kumkuma became firmly attached to the grass and stones. And when the aboriginal women, foraging for wood and wild herbs, came to the same part of the forest, they discovered the kumkum. Why were the Pulindis disturbed by lust? Seeing the kumkum on the ground reminded them first of Krishna and then of his intimate affairs with the gopis. Thinking about these things agitated their minds. The word smara can be understood to mean either remembrance or Cupid. Because the Upanishad uses smara. No, well, generally it's used the meaning remembrance. But it can also have that meaning. So that's the whole thing. The Upanishads have all these. And how were the Aborigine women relieved of this agitation? By picking up the red powder and smearing it on their faces and breasts, which were burning with lust. Having done this, the Pulindis felt completely satisfied. In contrast, the gopis speaking and hearing this account lament that they will never feel so satisfied. Right? Because they always want to continue more and more absorbing themselves in Krishna. As implied by the words Shri, splendid, and Mandita, adorned, the kumkuma became more beautiful by being smeared on the breasts of Krishna's beloved gopis, and even more effulgent by contact with Krishna's lotus feet. Though the Pulindis normally have no beauty or glow in their faces, when they decorated their own bodies with this kumkuma. From the grass and stones they became beautiful, effulgent, and free from the pain of lust. The gopi speaking means to say, we are condemned because we cannot become exalted like the aborigine women. Or, looking at the situation another way, because the blessed gopis are always immersed in the torment of separation from Krishna, they tend to presume that everyone else must also be suffering the same way. And so the Palindis too, they think, must now be suffering the pain of separation from Krishna. Yes?
Doesn't seem that those Palindis, they never met Krishna, they just, their lust was satisfied just by that.
Yeah, but they don't consort with Krishna, from what I understand. It's not that some of the leading ones may come when Krishna is with the gopis. They'll be part of the games. Like that. Means, let's say, Krishna and the gopis are playing some game, you know, and then there's always going to be some stakes in the game, right? And depending on who wins, then... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. So then Krishna will then make the stakes that, you know, if he wins, he gets to kiss Radharani or somebody. But then they'll cleverly says, on our behalf, you know, this Palinda girl here. So if you win, you get to kiss her. stuff like that. So all these fun things are there. Yes.
Isn't that pastime when they sell fruits in the village? Isn't that the Palindi women who come with a basket of fruits?
Yes,
and
yes.
I mean, Krishna exchanges a...
Yes,
digital.
Yes, yes. Yes. Or it'll be one of them, whether it's Palinda or Bila or like that. Yeah, you know, so they're one of them.
Yeah.
Like that. But, yeah. Is that that word?
If I remember correctly, that those ladies, they were going to the wives of the Brahmins, and they described Krishna to them.
Oh.
Is that
I'm not sure. You know?
Because somehow the wives of the Brahmins, they heard about Krishna, but it wasn't directly from as far as I understand.
Yeah, maybe. Because maybe they come and they do service around the house
and stuff like that.
And so then in that way they hear.
Hmm.
You know, because the Brahmins and that would have servants. And so then, in that way they could hear. You know, so there's so many things going on. It's a whole culture and all that. So the gopis take them as fortunate. Whatever the position, right? Mm. The limbs of the Palindis were covered, Purna, with kumkuma that looked exactly like the color of the soles of Sri Urugai's lotus feet. So when the gopis saw the Palindis, the gopis remembered how, for Krishna's pleasure, they themselves had first decorated their own breasts with that same kumkuma, because the color of that kumkuma resembled the hue of Krishna's feet. The gopis like to use it, right? Because it has that darkness and all that. It's not this, like this, some of this, you know, the chemical stuff that's like this bright, like fire engine red. Mm-hmm. It's actually a very kind of deep kind of red color. So it'll, in hue, it'll be similar like Krishna, right? Though it's reddish and he's bluish. But the point is, it's the same kind of hue. So, yeah.
Maharaj, when you say that Krishna is bluish, his feet are also bluish.
It means that the top parts, but the bottom will be reddish. So then maybe that's what they're meaning, is that have that same reddish color that he has.
Yes.
You know? So it'll all match nicely. So his feet will be, on the bottom will be reddish.
Yes.
So that's another way. Are they reddish just on their own, or are they reddish from touching the kumkuma on the breast of the gopis. You know, so that's also them.
Yes.
But they put it because it's like Krishna's feet, but then Krishna's feet become like the kumkuma that they wear.
Yes. And for them it's like prasadam. It's not like Krishna.
Yeah, for the Palindis. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. But even more, because it's the gopis and the Krishna. Yes. Not, so it's connected to that pastime, so that becomes even more nice. Yes. For them. Mm-hmm. Another explanation is also possible. The wonderful music of Krishna's flute had drawn the gopis into the forest to wander about searching for him. And when they couldn't find him anywhere, in the anguish of viraha bhav, they rolled on the ground, smearing the grass with the kumkuma from their breasts. Later, when the Palindis came, simply seeing the red powder made them remember Krishna and his dealings with the gopis, and they were stung by the arrows of Cupid. So either way, whether it's come from his feet directly from the breasts of the gopis or them by rolling around on the ground in ecstasy, you know, in separation. In any case, it reminds the Palindis of Krishna's interaction with the gopis. Like that. Thinking about the great love the gopis have for Krishna and recalling that this kumkuma had been in contact with the gopis' bodies, the aborigines picked up some of the powder with great reverence and applied it to their faces. Then their own lust impelled them to smear it also on their breasts. But then they wiped this kumkuma off their bodies and threw it away. Why? Because it caused them intense pain. They were already disturbed by lust just by seeing the kumkuma, and when they touched it, their minds became thoroughly agitated. Then, when they smeared it on their faces and breasts, the pain became so extreme that they quickly wiped the kumkuma off and threw it away, afraid that otherwise they would come to a bad end. But just because the intensity was so great. You know, so they just, you know, get rid of it. You know. Alas, the gopi speaking complains, just like those Palindis, we too are most unfortunate, cast into an ocean of intolerable pain. But just see how especially unlucky we gopis are. Just by touching the cosmetics from our bodies, people feel such misery that they throw the stuff away to protect their lives. After discussing the devotion of the Palindis, next Jaimini will speak on the special love of the cowherd boys for Krishna. Okay. So we'll stop here for today.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Sarvabhaita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanam.